going on there. And I mean, I think as might be clear, I started here on the cross pretentious, really, because I'm not really a poet at all. I'm a novelist and story writer, but I do love poetry and all, have done so. So what I'm going to do is, I've written some Irish poetry, poetry in Irish, and I've translated quite a deal of it. I've written some original English poetry, but not much. So I'm going to read, mainly in English, but I'll read some of my Irish poems as well. Some of them with translations, some of them with not. Those that don't have translations, you're just going to have to suffer. Anyway, the song is beautiful the way that I read it. sorry about that. I'm going to start with an English poem that I wrote recently in the garden, and it is for all those people who love gardens, which I don't. it's a sonnet. I like sonnet forms actually, for a clear reason. They're like building blocks of illusions. Don't they look just dandy, those daisies skirting the lawn, and the chrysanthemums straying quietly at the edge, while the roses, what else, bleed in all their bloomage in the garden, miles from bog and muck and sedge? And who would be nasty to those innocents and nasturtiums, dangling with dahlias along the enchanted way, while summer slurps on the sumptuous honeysuckle, and petunias blow foxglove for all the day can say? Low down the hyacinth-kissed stargazer lilies, and rhododendrons walk with sunny marigolds, geraniums in flocks dance quadrilles with begonias, and tulips do what tulips did of old. But for all that and all that, I prefer the living street with tons and tons of lovely concrete beneath my feet. This is a translation, I'll read the original first poem. Liam O'Flaherty, the short story writer and novelist from Garden Island, Fardenware, he only wrote one poem in his life, Fardenware, and this is it. And it's about flowers growing on the edge of a cliff in Ireland, called the Bloch Clagge. A duart me lech le blaha, nach suorach an aig de fuerchid, le vedien of aiv, taunt de suat an solo bruach na heide, gan fuid ach an chloch glas, ag a salach ar na neon, oig radach lorn le kio, ag a sfarig a chlaite. Ni scartin gilean an sa, o luan da saharan, le gion dar a far oriz. A duart na blaha chaige, is comedin a sor, pa vi fe vrych, a kio na chaige. The cliff flowers. And I said to the flowers, isn't this a miserable place that you have found to be taking the air, stuck here on the edge of the cliff, beneath you only the grey dark stone and the droppings of bird shit. A lousy place, swirled with mist and sea sprays, where some don't shine from week to week to bring you some joy, some lift. And the cliff flower said, what do we care, my love? We are bewitched by the sea's swish and by the music of the ocean. This is a poem by Gabriel Rosenstock, a friend of mine of a kind, as you might say. And it's a lovely poem about his daughter who woke him up at 5 o'clock in the morning to bring him down to watch television in the days of black and white television, and in the days when television didn't go on right through the night, which is not that long ago, but that's the way it was. And of course she saw nothing, or there was nothing on the television, but she saw all kinds of things in it. So this is the original first. Telefish. Ericoia Claudia Madian has to go telefish ohead. On Taylor Aragorn to the Banyin Vod Liengwile, Sheet Lane the Taylor, near Vaka Suli Blairse, if he had shown her a Blairse. From Solace Fort to Spade, Stoner the Hoons of Sir Skylon Vaughan. In Ish, Sauce, a Hunnishish a Schnachter, is Sharaf Fidel Schnachter, is Ulkavan Oster, a Free Oil, for Sikyun. A telling vision. 5 o'clock in the morning, and it wasn't just another sleepless night. She had been colourlessly waking furiously my inarguable young 2.5-year-old. We went on, holding on so tight, down to the cold room, me undressed, she fully kempt. Maybe I was being foolish, for she never mentioned anything at all. The stars still before the dawning, as alive as the TV. Outside, no cock was crowing yet. Here the screen showed a fuzzy, crystal gale. Happy now, I said. But she saw a giraffe in the glow, an arctic howl looping loops in the lushy snow. One, two. And this is a translation of Dovid Rujan with me of a poem by Louis Leclerc, another voice from, not a Cork voice. It's called Grammar. And anybody who studied Irish has been stuck with grammar. It's like, if you mention grammar to students, a fog descends upon your eyes immediately. So this is a point for grammar anyway, and it's maybe a bit better than the grammar book. You haven't learned to talk yet, and it doesn't bother you one whit. Verbs amuse and raise your spirit, while the imperative mood moves you to fun and love and even wit. Wake up, sleep, do, be, eat. Your jargon you've learned by heart, those old bubblings of a gnat, which linguists swallow just like that. Grin, grimace, groan, grunt, fart, scream, shout, yawn, blip, blast, universal meaning without claptrap. Fortunately, you bring up the rear in the league table of doctors, seers, child-wise psychoheads who know the score and worry worse than that, they fear that you will master, command and conquer every rule and twist of grammar. Maybe you don't have no function. Is what you say worth even a mention? Would you know an extreme conjunction from ands and ifs and buts and such and laughing bursts of punctuation through tears of perfect declensations? Grammar that skeletal pedantic bony art of its sound and sense who live at heart. This is a very short poem, it's one of my own poem in Irish, which I have translated. It was easy to do, there were only four lines in it. It was a friend of mine who wanted to have a child for years, was unable to have it, and eventually she did, and called her Aisling, which of course is dreamy. And so this is a poem which is about Aisling. Point four. Aisling away, bringle away dihe, kaira real, miru is chwite. A hope by night, a dream by day, a miracle now, Aisling always. Okay, I'm going to read a story just before we go on to other ones. And because it's coming up to Christmas, I think I read this here before, but it's coming up to Christmas, I thought I'd read a Christmas story. It's called Jesus Wept. This is a translation of my own as well. And it came to pass in those days that Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea to Mary and to Joseph the woodworker. And after he was born, she placed him in swaddling clothes because it was cold, and she laid him in a manger. And she rejoiced in her motherhood, and commenced to come to him and to sing, and to chant lullabies, and to put him to sleep. And she gave him sustenance and comfort, and spent much of the day and most of the night hugging him and minding him because he was her firstborn. And the child looked back at her and hummed and sang and made small, gurgling, childish noises. And she rejoiced even the more that he did not whinge and cry his guts out as most children do. And Joseph rejoiced even more again, because Joseph was a man and would not be expected to put up with the whinging and mewing and puking and screaming of babies. And some short time after that, when King Herod discovered that the so-called wise men from the east had fooled him, and had gone their own way without informing him where the infant Jesus lay, he ordered a decree that every male child under 2 years of age in the vicinity of Bethlehem be put to death. And the soldiers zapped through the town and ripped the children from their mother's arms, or swept them from where they slept or from where they played, and they hacked the heads off some of them and chopped the legs off others, and extracted the nails from the fingers of yet more, just for the fun of it, although the more humane of them drove their stakes through the children's hearts so as to get it over with quickly. They did this because they were soldiers of the emperor, and they were just obeying orders as soldiers of the emperor do, and just because there was a big lot of fat money going on the corpse of every child, no matter what weight they were. And by this time the baby Jesus and his mother and Joseph were safe and sound in Egypt. It hadn't been that difficult for them to escape, since Jesus was always a good child and had never cried, nor bawled, nor whinged. But when the souls of the dead innocent babies left their bodies, they sailed through the air to whatever place the souls of dead innocent babies go, who have been murdered without mercy. But as they floated through the air, one of them looked down at the infant Jesus, and he showed him his smashed skull, and his bloodied hands, and his extracted nails, and his little soul that had never been allowed to grow, and his pure undefiled body, that had never had the opportunity to contemplate sin. Excuse me. And the Spirit cried out aloud to Jesus, "This is all your fault." And the infant Jesus looked up at him from the straw in his manger, and his eyes filled up with tears. And that was the very first time that Jesus wept. And I read a lot of very, very short poems. The Irish in the 18th century had these very short, and the 17th century very, very short, quick poems, most of which I've translated. And really, the Irish, most of them are quite short. The Irish one is this one. It's the guy who hopes that English rule would finish in Ireland at some stage in the 18th century. The wind has howled, fake things, saints, parts, life works, Alistair, Caesar, commies, all empires run out of breath. We are not the last, nor middle, nor certainly not the first, to pray that English strength and power will lead to death. That's a very short, quick. A lot of these have to do with that deadly topic of the 17th century, of the clergy, death and destruction. The first one is about death itself. Four lines again, I'll read the original translation. Unbought. It's great as open slave, not of a new in the deal and the rate. It's got to be defined upon boss, and God is his father, bit. The clergy told black lies that God didn't approve of theft, while he had on his side the best of robbers, death. One about a book. Truishin, a yawid did going, took it in law, it was fear. David Nath was shown a cord. The violent and raw the steel. A pity about that, my small white book, the day will come it's true, that the hand that wrote it will be as shriveled and as completely dead as you. He's a very cheerful, as you can see. But we went to, this is a more cynical one, about a fox. On Shinnach, Tear Wid, Quirin Cluing, Erevekin, a gaddo famous are Cheanach, Minikir, Erevekin. The fox is exceedingly clever, and no one is as clever as him, and yet for all his cleverness, they often sell his skin. Another one about the English, there's lots of references to the English in Irish literature of the 17th century. Shachin Sassanis is madly his severe, by a kind of crude style of a Sassanis reach. Beware the English and mad dogs in pain, and a bull's horn and a stallion's hoof, and the English once again. No doubt about that one. This is about critics, poets who like this one. Coin to the city, this me gear the intuitus, me I for us the city, as the law is the unto. The poets are criticized, but it's not them that are guilty, but the dumbass, stupid critics whose heads are entirely empty. And there's one about critical theory. This is 17th century, that was critical theory, even then, believe it or not. They didn't call it that, they just by another worse name. Sigurd Ninitlus, Anavan, Dauper, Hanavar, Aisha, Dunan, Aelan, Adida, Suida, Aspecia, and Gaina. The genius of critical theory is exhausted by long, boring yawns, but even the night birds at morning give up with the coming of dawn. And another one about, so death again, and more stuff like that. And how you should spend everything on food and whatever else, you know. Common vanity of the laws is quit amorach a corda, moragatic one style with the amoyal of orca. Te matros is truska, cross of a mosne grade, revolvich is unfell, the sarvelach the sailor. Spend what you have in your hands and seek what you can find. If you do not spend life to the full, you will leave it all behind. Pilgrimage and fasting is good, and flagellation without crying. But charity and love and kindness are the best before you start dying. Another one about the clergy. It's being a core in the bride, beaching the Hanasi who is of Martin Croft and Double upon a Sabbath Mayfair. The brothers are very fine people, as we learn in scripture and story, but if meanness is a true virtue, then indeed the priests are holy. Alright, and, something even not cynical this time. Coadigan Tassus Fort, Coadigan Fort Raw, Tainan Tier the Snill, the Sonnen of Shin the Raw. Heat and love are much the same, love and heat are fevers, with jealousy sticks in the marrow and poisons life forever. For short. The Scots did the same, there's just one or two Scottish ones, which I won't read the original of these, which I don't have them with me, but I would hear. If anyone's in the eyes of Sky, the big captains on the Dagon, and of course, as you know, the Scots landlords were some of the worst bastards you can find throughout their tenants all over the place. And the people attacked them dead in Castle and didn't succeed, and MacLeod warned them dead in Castle and revenge. So, four lines again. Though they nearly burned Dunvegan Castle from head to heel, MacLeod burning his tenants' houses was entirely real. They didn't succeed, but he did. There's a Scottish boy called George Campbell Hay, who actually read quite mad, which helped. He wrote a lot of longish poems, and one he fought in the war. He didn't want to fight in the Second World War. He escaped from the army and spent 3 months wandering the hills of Scotland, and eventually put him into the army, and he fought in North Africa, but he didn't like what he had to do, and he particularly didn't like Europe. He was anti-European, so those people who voted against the Lisbon Treaty would like this. So Europe's downfall, the translation of Gary. Europe's fancy walls and castles are tumbled down in heaps of rubble, all those lovely carvings split and shattered from cap to neck, her towers and turrets all undone, bitterly blasted one by one. Her hallowed people in their halls are scattered now across the world. Needy people in their plight, turning their days to endless night. The sharp cry of pitied limbs competes to drown the howling winds. One third of Europe's beauty strength, dissipated, wasted, dumped or spent. The old revenge of art, culture, ha! Humanity's beating heart are what? But now she is only a prick of Asia, a kind of Balkan, or whatever. Like that. As I was talking about Scotland, it was mentioned, Paul mentioned the introduction, I once wrote a novel, amongst some other things, of an Irish poet. It's a great story, which I won't tell you about because I should be reading about it, but he was a poet. There's only a few lines about him, one of the annals from the 13th century. And he was a poet, was born in County Meath, trained in Cork as a poet, went to work as a professional poet in Sligo, working for the O'Connor under the O'Donnell. Tax collector came to him one day to collect taxes. He refused, being a poet, of I don't have to pay taxes. And there was a row with himself in tax money, he said taxes were an act and killed him. And he wrote a great poem saying, I killed the tax collector, so fucking hot. And the barley poetry. And then But unfortunately, his master, the O'Donnells, didn't like that, and they chased him. They chased him to Connacht and chased him to Limerick, which he found more dangerous than I would have said. And then he went to Dublin, he went to Dublin, and he fled from Dublin, and he went to work in Scotland with the Lennoxes, which is near Glasgow, near Dumbarton and Glasgow, because it's the same country, basically. And he worked with them for many years, and he wrote many poems about them. And then, when he finished with them, he went on a crusade, and was involved in the Sixth Crusade, the Siege of Damietta. He came back to Ireland, tried to make peace with his honours, didn't succeed, went back to Scotland, died in Scotland, and his ancestors were poets in Scotland until the 19th century. So this is like in the 14th century, the longest single political dynasty in Ireland. So I wrote this novel about him, which I'm not going to read all of it, but just a bit of it. And this is, I will read the English first, and then I'll read a bit of the Irish as well. This is where he has been exiled from Ireland, and he's on his way across to Scotland. And a bit like Beowulf, I try to get alliteration into every line. So it's next up, the ship sailing. About my going from Ireland to Scotland, there is not much to relate. The slap of the sea strongly beneath us, the bright brine urged by our oars. All with an isle on our eye's edge, brushed with white billows, the salt flood sea beckoned us onwards. Joy jumps to our sight, where the spotted salmon leaping from the waves on our white way. The wind lay down and hit sweetly the upper nooks of the air, and the sea seemed to quiet quilt with a growl of flower. Others before me who had passed this way I carried on my back. The sons of Uisnech, whom no king in Ireland would not have given welcome. Colum Cille, through whom the birds and the wild beasts pined. It was his fate to see faith and fealty, my fate before me as blind as the moon. Much was the difference between us and great Fergus, son of Erc, who stretched his sight across the sound from his fast fort and settled his kingdom just east of Ide. He saw his weaving about end, whose fires of fame flamed in his head. As for me, the pain scoured a hole in my heart as our ship slew the stern from Ireland. Mad Sweeney, astride the big berg of Alta Craig, home for seagulls, cold for guests. Wet our beds were, little thought we gave to rock, nor wished the holy way we wended. Sad our flight, two sharp currents, a flying madman and a fleeing poet. Sad our going, kept from our kenning the kingdom we came. A wee bit of the original Irish, which attempts to mix with a lot of Gardic poetry, I think, in English. Mother Lemonhusa is an airing of his olive oil, Nishu Muran, Ahish. Lena Farage, the lawyer, Fuin, Gilda Mara, Fuin, our Rava. Tinoin, Glossus, Bui, Tumfrika, a sheer Mui, and Pilot, the Vadi Gain. Inishagoma, Yer, our Suida, of Refuin, and a Pile of Yau. Hireman Arida, Shehaw, Ling, Han and Gallic. Luchoy, Riot Doing, the Brodoin, Graca, Elema, Breen, Fena, Sui, and Wil, Fume. Lays no by the sheath, is done the sucking wing, in Linnet Oster of the Nave. Is huckering and wait, in a poor, raid, mean gal, on a clown, got coffin. Bring Ida, having road to Rome, on Uppergum, and the Green. Nick Ishlin, not for the nailing ring, not for a fight, Rome. Colum Tille or a poor, or Amosa, or any of the eggy up in the year. Be Shanon the shoe, the sheer of shed tedu, or the cross of it. Be no quit shed tinun, or Roma mach, hodow, the shingal. And eventually gets there and gets out of there. And here is. Here's a poem which many of you might have learned in school in Irish, and have a translation of it. It's about the Fenians and Fionnet, feet fed in Fenian, who we know are meant to be very pure and clear of heart and of soul and of body. And and when Patrick came back to Ireland, he was asking Creek and Mockro 9 what were the traits of the Fenians of the Fionnet. And it's a short poem, and I read it for us and then I say something about the translation because I did it myself, but it needs some explaining. Which many people have been learning to do. I translated as three senior bastards trust. There's Patrick, I translate as Cotric. These are kind of in jokes for Irish scholars, but it's not hard to explain it. Because when Patrick came to Ireland, there was no P. And so the Irish couldn't pronounce the name Patrick, and they called him Cotric. That's true. So, Creech and Macronai, I have here a Cree chair, and you might say, why? And the reason is that in Yeats wrote a play once with Creech and Macronai, and Yeats had a clue about these things. And when they were producing the play, some of the actors who were English had no idea how to pronounce Creech and Macronai. And Yeats said, oh, Creecha was the don't know Creecha. So kind of joke. And he's from Portugal. Alright, the Gaelic lover Cotric asked, wheelchair of the grey hair. Son of Ronan of the rhetoric, in Bot Ireland, the bleak and bare. Tell me, you sweet waffler, what made them all give way? How come they came and suffered you, premium bastards, to hold its way? Greetings, Gugus Gladly, said we chair, much understanding, or purely of heart, or mutterly trunk of limb, and trot, and tongue. So, that's a maybe we go for another story after that one. There's a story called Flat Earth, Flat Earth, selfish planetary. So. In those far off days when people were a lot less gullible than they are now, some people maintained that the Earth was as flat as a billiard table. They said that if you went to the edge of the world, you would fall off and go down, 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 to hell maybe, or certainly to the kingdom of darkness from which there was no return. But there were others who said that the world was as round as a ball, and that if you walked west, you would certainly return to the east, no different from a fly dawdling around an apple. But there were others who said that the world was oval-shaped, but nobody bothered with them, as anybody who played with oval balls was ipso facto a bit queer. But those who maintained that the world was flat like a billiard table, soon they had to fight with those who thought it was round and circular like a ball. And even though they were wise men and elders and even geniuses on each side, they could not agree whether the flatters or the ballers were ultimately right, as they had no common ground between them. And because they were people, and because they couldn't possibly think of any other way of resolving their conflict, and because they were never likely to agree with one another, they decided to finish their dispute by war, because they were, after all, people. And even though cities were razed to the ground and priceless treasures destroyed forever and countless millions of people annihilated, at least the war came to an end and the question was finally decided. And the professors and the wise men began to research and to publish their findings of how the world was flat, because it was they, the flat earthers, who had won the war. And just in case there might be any difference or dissenting opinion, they collected all their enemies together, or those of them that were left, and they bundled them into cars and carriages and chariots, and then they drove the cars and the carriages and the chariots over the cliff at the edge of the world, because after all, they were right. This again is a translation, again somebody may have learned at school, a poem by Rastri, Michel Rastri in Scylla, Long Dope, which is Grawl, Suilid on Sonnet, the Gun Crawl, Shotan Ishmael, Makul, Valla, a Shing of Joy, the Fopi Follow. Rastri actually didn't compose that at all, it was a forgery, but that's a separate question. So because he didn't write it, I decided to change it and call it definitely not Rastri. And maybe the cynical. There's no member of A.S. Dawn here. I'm not Rastri the poet, emptied of hope and love, with eyes wide shut, but at a shove I could return to my lass and cobble a few rhymes which would make the cut in Poetry Ireland or the Irish Times. But that's why I'm here, with my arse getting broader, with a fine fat canoeus from Cronin to a song. Okay, I was cynical about it, there we go. This actually is a translation of the very original, of the very first poem I read here from time ago, which is a poem by a 17th century poet, Rodolfo Gruder, when he came when he fell in hard luck, and one night he came into a pub when he was travelling the road and looked for a drink, and he always got drink and credit. So the girl behind the bar refused him the drink, and he decided to curse her. So just be careful along the way. And because poets were believed to have the power of destroying things and having walked going through the roads and all kinds of things like that. I tried to teach any hurling team, but it didn't work. This is the Irish inventor in English. Sherry Shuck Sherry to Eager Throne of Chask. Sherry Shuck Sherry to Eager Throne of Chask. Getting Shingle Deborah Yet and Scorn and Sacht. Verach Shear for Gone Lone Far Yar, on Dedeline Dan Gerigin Thou Reckoning Yet the Felly Gilly of the Yoch Task. is perceive the negation of the cross. O sech the sheen of every genus glory and a garb, when stelling in our legacy in the glory of God. Meridian of Berenice on Sol and a cub, the heritage in the glittering support Shamach, take tell him we have a pedigree more over the flach, the Dugan deed on Merishido horse for cut. Relegine and Elegine of Dor and a man, the sech the need of Etilie for road of a mock, a venerably what dying dig of Yon is out, from letting cheese to legacy more joy that cock. This is really so I decided to give it the full treatment of this, I could, and I called it a bar of bad, the bad bar of bitch, and I'm right, which is not anywhere at all. James Stephen is a translation of it as well, and Lawrence Waller, but this is better. The bad bar of bitch. The snot-nosed, snivelling, prune-dried, bad bar of bitch. Refuse me drink, so I gladly gloriously court her snobby sourpuss ways that won't wash here the ugly bird-brained bumpkin who despised my thirst. If I spread the word the dumb bunny would get the sack, my friend the publican would serve with joy on tap. The beer the bitch refused, may she contract herpes, gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, and raw gummy clap. She's a hot dog haranguing happily with a piercing voice, who chucked me out of my head with maximum force. I say nothing about her mother, but not by choice. For all I care, she can get stuffed or give up the ghost. That club-footed clot, who was never a woman to me, or wizened old puss, crab-apple face, that's so hat. May she blubber forever and crawl in the face of the earth, and ploddingly plop in her porridge or patterns of crap. Irish was a holy tongue. I think I actually read this one here, and I can't find the original, which I know I read. So again, I did a translation of it called A Little Moth. I couldn't find the original in it, so A Little Moth. I love the ballad form as well as the Scottish border ballad. The four lines that tell a story in their own way, as well as the sonnet and a few other things. I wish I were a little moth. With wings of talcum white, I spin around your wardrobe and eat your clothes at night. I don't want to be a butterfly with wings sparklingly brilliant, snotsy green, bottle streaky blonde, and highlights of gold dashed vermilion. Just an ordinary plain moth, hopefully even a moth just, going about my feeding business, munching garments, or some such. I wish to get inside your wardrobe for nightly things to do, nestle in a garment by John Rocha, find an organza shirt to chew. I cannot say that I'm particular, not especially a bon vivant. I don't mind those dumb store knickers nor snappy shorts from Yves Saint Laurent. I don't care where you go to my lovely when you're alone in your bed, nor the thoughts that there will surround you, as long as I get well fed on a micromesh bodysuit by Versace, an Armani sleeveless satin top, a fine strip chiffon dress by Zara, or a see-through tights from Topshop. Your smelly socks I eat as starters, your underpants I masticate, that special pair you throw away, but in which you often exaggerate your manners, your lunchbox, hoping for another bite of cherry, much as I'd like to gobble Flintstones or a blouse that you bought in pennies. Your gown with flower applique hem, I didn't really want to mention, nor the wrap you bought in Spain, I'm not a dedicated follower of fashion. Just the moth who likes his food, his main course, soup or doom, who loves the contents of your wardrobe, but doesn't give a fuck for you. here's an Irish poem of my own, which is not a translation of it, but it's about uncrooked things that I like. I don't think these are restricted, like certainly that are bent up. So, Cranley Buggery, which is a seesaw. So, I just read it, but I don't have a translation. Winnen crown am axen chreen, quirn dwigger ash den aimed, shawl an aimed roan spele, winnen sperach ad ar gale, kello an chantinus an fervor, sely posh di grain of fervor, kaidi shir of hoi de tas, nadeshin an bernach chin the dash, Ashigamach and Vini Girach, Diabrig of Roth and Tishin Dianis, Unrevoid with Garvis for Theatre, Unearing Alone from Tehach Leatre, Nanny design is hoven round, where valet are putting us colour round. Lumber corner is cut for fear, the wash here are now green and teal. So I won't even attempt to explain it, but I'm going to probably finish your story, because I think it's appropriate if I can find it. And it's about poets and poetry. And the title is, and I think I read it here before, but some people will not remember it, hopefully, it's called The Poet Who Died in Wet Head. So it's kind of revenge for certain things along the way. This is it. A poet died. This in itself is a rare and unusual occurrence because poets are normally thought to be immortal. It was even suggested that this poet committed suicide because he wrote a bad poem. He was raised up to the gates of heaven so that he might be judged and that his bad poem could be weighed against the other good works of his life. I'm very sorry, Peter of the Gate said, since he had read what the critics and reviewers had to say. You can't come in here. And anyway, the joint is overflowing with poets. You have to go to the other place. He actually needs some poets to keep the whole crew of theologians, theosophists, and lawyers, and lawyers amused. Even though the poet was undoubtedly disappointed, he had some experiences of being rejected. He had never received a bursary from the Arts Council, nor given readings before the President, nor gone on reading junkets away and abroad. Look, look, just suppose, he said to Peter, keeping his tears back, because he knew he would need them in the other place. Just suppose I did get in. Could you tell me how I would spend the day, and what do you do to pass the time within the pearly gates? Oh, that's not a difficult question, said Peter. You would spend your time listening to poetry being read. Paul, and Paula, and Theo, and Paul again, Chiron, and Billy, and Nola, and Derek, and T.S. and Norris, and Ted, and Alfred, and William, and Silly Willie, they're all here. Well, good for them, he said, and off he went with his tail, or whatever, between his legs. When he reached the Sulphur Gate, the welcoming party was waiting for him, dressed in police uniform. Look, before I come in, he said, the poet said, would you mind telling me how I would spend the day? What do you do to pass the time inside the Sulphur Gates? Oh, that's not a difficult question to answer, said the devil, devilishly. You would spend the day listening to poetry being read. Well, isn't that just deadly, said the poet. There is nothing I prefer more than to listen to poetry being read from the crack of dawn to the drawing down and dying of the light. What poetry will I listen to? Your own, of course. Your own family.
Thank you.